Don't worry, I won't hurt you. I only want to have some fun. I was dreaming when I wrote this. Forgive me if it goes astray. But when I woke up this morning, could have sworn it was Judgment Day. The sky was all purple. There were people running everywhere, trying to run from the destruction. You know, I didn't even care. Say, say, 2000, party over. Oops, we're out of time. So tonight I'm going to party like it's 1999.
Prince, yes.
Yeah, baby.
I think it was after the second, or the first verse, I already, wait a minute, I know that track.
Yeah. One of my all-time favorite.
I love it. He was smart. He was a smart man back in the 70s to write that, get ready for the 99. And then it was just, I remember celebrating 99 and everybody was playing that or versions of that or whatever.
But that's right. Right through. Even today, that song.
It's still going on. Still going on. Yeah. Well, it's the only good music that's going on these days.
Yeah, you know, me and you, we have the same feeling.
I can't tell you, Brad. Well, maybe Teddy Slim. I mean, there's certain Teskey Brothers. There's certain guys that are coming out of the woodwork that are doing something interesting. But regular pop culture crap, I don't get, never will. I don't find it as talent.
No, I used to be a huge hip-hop fan in high school, right, in the 80s, 90s.
You were the same age or how old are you?
55.
So we're roughly about the same age. Yeah. So we went through the whole spectrum.
Right?
When music was music.
Music was music. You went through, you know, you're in grade school and you're listening to rock, heavy metal, right? And then you go into that hip-hop thing.
Yeah.
But today, I just, my daughter listens to it and I just can't, It's not hip-hop.
Do they genuinely like it or do they just go with the flow and listen to it?
Good question. I don't know. She listens to it all the time. But I'll tell you what, though. If I start playing my old school music, if her friends are over, they're all listening to it, right? So, but I can't listen to theirs. So I asked them that. I said, okay, do you think when you're my age, you think your kids are going to listen to your hip hop music?
Nope. It's dead and buried. And what's really sad is when you start talking to a younger generation now and they're like, oh, I know that track. That's a modern day track that's sampled from that.
That's
right. Back in our day, there was no sampling.
No.
Everybody, the worst thing that we had was Milli Vanilli, which was, that was a scandal, right? Which wasn't huge. Even sampling. It was just like lip syncing crap. Was, but all right, that's not what we're going to talk about, but a couple of things. So welcome to the show, Paul. I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, sir.
Reaching out. We connected on LinkedIn and we got talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, I'm always interested in having, you know, anything to do with mortgage and real estate and the economy and what's happening and what you guys do, brokering. And it's a funny, funny state that we're in right now.
It's a shit show.
Canada, our leadership has placed us in this situation. And I think for the most part, a lot of Canadians are just riding the wave thinking that it might get better or they're just ignoring it. I don't know. We're going to get into this whole show and talk about it. So I want to first thank you for bringing the natas. I really appreciate
that. My pleasure.
The whole room is smelling like that, which is great. I love it. I'm going to have it. I might dip in one. So I might make it a prerequisite for anybody coming on the show.
There you go.
But no, so www.pauljrocha.com. You can find him. Also find him under www.mortgagebriefs.com. And then his email is paul@pauljrocha.com. Also find him on LinkedIn and you'll be able to get his whole bio and everything like that. And his phone number is 416-432-7662. And then you're also connected with Mortgage Scout, right?
Yeah, those are my people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And then I want to do a quick shout out to Antonio and the boys from AquaStop. I'm wearing his tee today. And if you want to bring some swag one day, and I'll throw it on as well.
I enjoyed
the awareness. So that's it. Now that's my housekeeping. That's what I've got to do. Now I've got some questions and talking points, but I guess we can start the show by talking, I guess, the elephant in the room, that do most Canadians, did they know that this was going to happen?
With the interest rates?
Yeah, everything. Are they paying attention now?
Now they are. But you know what, Manny? I still think a lot of people think this was just a blip and it won't ever happen again. Right. So I still kind of get that feeling, although there's a lot of pain right now. There's a lot of people in trouble, right?
When it's pain, you're talking about refinancing.
In general, refinancing or even coming up for renewal. You know, you have someone that was in, you were 2024, right?
Yeah.
So if you locked in 2019 in the twos and your mortgage is coming up for renewal today, you did nothing wrong, right? All you bought before you locked in 2019, 5 years, it's coming due today. Your payments are going to go double. Right.
And if you were fortunate enough to lock in at fixed.
That's right. If you were variable, you weren't.
Yeah, variable, you've been feeling the pain all the way up the roller coaster ride, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I'm assuming you tell me, but the majority of people went variable, didn't they?
No, I think in Canada, we're still, it's still a minority going to variable, but it's increasing, right? It's been increasing for a long time. See, variable rates have been really smart over the long, since 1990. okay. around the 90s because rates have been coming down since the 90s.
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost been like a no-brainer. Right. But no one ever expected, and we kept on telling them, no one ever expected that rates would go back up or could go back up, right?
They just assumed it was going to stay there.
Always going to be there.
Everything's all happy-go-lucky.
That's right. That was a
but that's not history.
It's not. But it's not necessarily all their fault either.
No.
Because in December of 2021, Tiff Macklem from the Bank of Canada comes out and says, hey, guys, we're not going to touch rates until 2024. 3 months later, he starts increasing. So he's essentially telling people, go out, buy cars, buy houses, do what you got to do. Let's get the economy moving, right? Because we're not going to touch rates for 3 years. It took them 3 months.
So where's the accountability at that point, Paul?
There isn't.
Why can't we have more accountability? Why can't, as Canadian citizens, turn around and go and hang on a sec, you did this. And I saw this recently because there's a bunch of people that I follow and people that have been on the show. And there was someone recently, a couple of weeks ago, posted that, you know, all the big banks are talking about interest rates are going to go down. And I just said, anybody who's believing that is drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. Because I look at it like you've got a business that offers a service and they're not selling much of that service. What are they going to do to the market? They're going to tell the market, by the way, it's going to come down eventually. Prepare for that to get it going. Mm-hmm. But that's not reality. Like, you can say that as a marketing ploy and say it's going to come down. So then you can possibly consider buying something. But that's not what we think is going to happen. We're never going to see the twos again. Are we going to see them?
I mean, who knows? I mean, listen, there's we don't know how bad things right now are looking, kind of scary, very volatile. I don't know if you saw the stock market this past couple of days.
It's brutal. So
we don't know what we were at zero rates for a long time.
Yeah.
We don't know what that's actually going to do. That's actually not good, right? Having rates at zero or close to zero is actually not good, and it's never been done. So we don't really know what the after effects are going to be. We're starting to feel them now. But we don't know. I mean, could we get into a big recession? We could. And if we get into a big recession, you might see rates coming back
down. I think that, see, the thing is that I think on the show for the last 2-3 years, I've been saying that it's a recession that's happening, right? I don't think it's a light switch. I think we've been just gradually,
we're in a recession.
From the time that we're talking about, we've already been. When you look at the factors that are associated to a recession, all that's been happening. So how could you not? And then I love that you brought up the stock market thing, because it was the first time that Japan, their interest rates, they were always zero. And now they started increasing. And then all of a sudden, the same week, they start talking about how McDonald's is seeing massive losses, which is a clear indication that, technically speaking, cheap food out there, people are not buying it.
I can't buy it.
So if you can't buy cheap food, we already know we were struggling for how many years now in groceries.
That's right. That doesn't
happen. The attacks on the big chains and everything like that. And we're saying, this is ridiculous. We know that the people that are providing the food, the farmers and everybody else, they're not seeing these profits. It's all coming down through the corporate side of things. But so if we're getting hit on the food side there, now you got fast food being taken a hit and it's all dropping. There's all kinds of threats of war all over the place. There's such a unstable, you know, the stuff that's going down south. Canada has always been paying attention to or reflective of what goes on down south. So when we start seeing things happen in the States, it automatically happens in Canada. So for anybody to think that this is going to get better anytime soon, I think you're really mistaken and you should really be doing a lot more homework.
You should.
That's all it is, right?
There's a lot of stuff going on in the background that we don't know. That what happened with Japan on Monday, right? I mean, there's a lot of greed involved in there, and that was a problem. What happened essentially is because Japan's rates were at zero or virtually zero. I think
virtually zero. It was just above it. It was like, it was insane.
It was stupid.
Yeah.
And then they increased, right? So they went from 0.1 to 0.25, right? So they increased it to a quarter. So what happened? Let me backtrack.
Yeah.
So because rates were zero, what they were doing is they were borrowing in Japan at zero, and then investing it in the U.S.
Making a lot of money.
Huge amounts of money, right? Because in the U.S., even if you just bought bonds, government bonds that were paying 5% or dividends.
Your return was insane.
Insane. And it was all leveraged, right? So and we're talking like big banks. It wasn't the little guys. It was like the big guys. Big guys were doing this. So big banks were borrowing, right, from other banks and the Bank of Japan to go ahead and do these investments. And so what would happen, there's two parts to that transaction, right? When first you borrow in Japan. Okay, so you got Japanese yen, billions of dollars, trillions of dollars in Japanese yen, right? And then you have to then transfer that money to the States to be able to buy American stocks and American securities. So when you're doing that transfer, you're selling yen to buy American dollars. So what you're doing is you're putting pressure on the yen drops, right? The American dollar goes up. So we've seen that over the last few years. So they were doing that. So what happened on Monday was when the Bank of Japan increased their rates, they started to get squeezed on the one side, right? Because interest rates went up in Japan. On the other side in the States, you had the stock market starting to come down, right? And you had their interest rates starting to come down. So now they're getting squeezed on both sides. So they started getting margin calls.
Yeah.
The banks started getting their own margin calls and they had to dump. And so while they were dumping stocks and securities and then having to put the, you know, sell US to buy Japanese yen, the reverse happened. So now you're buying the yen started increasing. So now you're buying back the yen at higher than what you sold it for, right? So now you got to sell more stocks to buy back more yen. And so it was just a vicious cycle on Monday. So there's a lot of this stuff going on in the background that we have no clue. You and I will have never have any idea what's going on. So going back to that question, I used to be like you, and I think over the last 2 weeks, I'm changing my mind. Because I used to say, I remember Benjamin Tao from CIBC came out in February of this year.
Okay.
And he said, you know, he fully expects that rates will drop 1.75% in 2024, and then another 75 basis points in 2025. And I'm looking at him and I'm saying, that's nuts. This guy's completely out to lunch, right? And I thought exactly what you were thinking. This sounds manipulative to entice people to go stay in variable, right? Because the spreads on variable are a lot higher than on fixed. And so that was my original thought. And I'm not saying I walked away from that, but I'm starting to think, what if he knew something we didn't? What if he knew how bad stuff was in the banking sector? And so he knew that banks had to, or that the rates had to drop to support the banks. What if that's an option?
Well, what if it's actually, I mean, right now, obviously in Canada, we have record high bankruptcies going on. We have record high foreclosures going on. Power of sales. These are all record highs happening, right? People can't carry these costs, right?
That's right.
So they're being forced. So it's like you got a lot of people that have to refinance either this year, next year, or even in 26, right? They look at their numbers and they're like, my job, my income, my significant other, we can't hit the numbers. So we have to start looking at trying to sell this. I was just before you got here on the phone with a good friend of mine who's an agent, and we were talking about it, and he was telling me 2028. He's not going to start to see pre-cons are taking a huge hit right now. So we know which towers are up there that are, I guess, just struggling to get finished, right? Mm-hmm. But anything new, that's not happening right now.
That's right.
We know subdivisions are all being slowed down, if not stopped completely. So, like, you have to start selling now, basically, if you want to survive the next cycle. So when I look at that kind of stuff, I'm looking at that going, people are realizing that their numbers are not going to align with what is going to happen in the next 2-3 years. So for a bank to turn around and say, listen, this is coming, this is going to be predictive. And I'm like, I don't know. We can't say for certain until the U.S. election completes itself, which is November 5th, right? We all know we're way too close. And that volatility right there is insane. Assassination attempt. We have a changing of the guard. Technically speaking, it was a coup. Doesn't matter. Leave it at that. Now we have our own election supposed to be happening next October and, you know, being pushed the extra amount for the MPs to get their pensions increase and all that crap, right? Yeah. And so we can't even get a vote of no confidence, right, to get it sooner. So as a consumer, these are two huge variables that you shouldn't be doing anything drastic. You should be doing as much homework as possible
100%.
To figure out where should we go.
That's right.
And the problem is that I think you should be speaking to a person like yourself and another broker and another person and maybe speak to the bank. I'm not a big fan of the banks. Like, banks are, Canada's never been in the red. Any of our banks have never seen what the US experienced back in 2009 with their short, right? So they didn't, Harper prevented that, right? Which was a good thing. And that was the reason why I voted Harper, because he was looking at it like, listen, if we do this, this is what's going to happen. And it's funny how on social media, you can replay those clips all over him saying it when he was during the election in 2015, that if you let this person in, this is what's going to happen. And verbatim, everything that he said has happened. So how do we look to our leadership? Like, we can't trust them. There's no accountability. They can get away with doing all kinds of stuff. And meanwhile, we're left here holding these insane amounts of mortgage payments, all kinds of stuff, renewals, and struggling. Like, it's just insane. Yeah. Insurance are going up. I talked to so many people about insurance rates, and I'm like, have you been a good driver? Have you been a good person? Have you had any claims? Nothing, 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 nothing. We've all been good people because we're now in our 40s and 50s. So it's like, it's funny. back as a teenager, I'm like fretting every weekend how many demerit points I'm losing because of my actions of driving. Yeah. Nowadays, it's like crystal clear, but yet my rates keep on going up.
Yeah.
I haven't changed the vehicle. I haven't bought a luxury vehicle. I haven't gone insane with driving or anything like that. So why are my rates going up? Oh, it's across the board. It's just across the board. So there's losses. So like you said, I totally agree with you. There's a lot of stuff behind the curtain that we don't know about, but people do know about it, and they're doing things that's affecting us dramatically.
100%.
Introducing Alt Labor Solutions, the game changer for contractors and laborers. Are you a contractor needing skilled labor, or have labor in need of quick shifts? Or how about buying, selling, or renting tools, material, and equipment? Connect easily with contractors and find resources hassle-free through Alt Labor Solutions online platform. Post job listings with project details, browse public resumes, and choose the right person for the job. Explore their job board for new opportunities and connect with top talent. Alt Labor Solutions revolutionizes the labor industry with a user-friendly interface, secure payments, and a supportive team. Visit them at altlaborsolutions.com and start connecting with other contractors today. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
100%. Do you know what the repo market is?
Oh, I can imagine it's insane right now.
Well, not the repossession market, the bank repo market.
Oh.
No? So bank repo market is where banks go to lend each other money, usually just overnight. Okay? It's really quick. You need money. Here's billions of dollars. Take it. It's secured. We know you're good. Money's in your account like instantly, right?
That's been going on all the time?
Yeah. So it was set up by the Bank of Canada way back when, right? And so this is, we need it. Because banks need this liquidity or else our financial system would be in trouble, right? Okay. So this system exists and it works. However, CIBC comes out with a report last month and they say that the system isn't working right now, okay? And the system is illiquid and that the Bank of Canada has been coming in every day and supporting the system with billions of dollars. We're talking like $8 billion, $15 billion. Every day, they're coming in and supporting the system. And one of the reasons that it's happening is because the banks that have the money, and according to CIBC, there's three banks, three of the big six, okay? So the big five plus Laurentian, I think.
Yep.
Something like that. Three of the banks represent 80% of the money that's available to lend overnight, okay? And they're hoarding that money. They're not lending it, okay? There's no obligation for them to lend it, right? So they're hoarding it. And so the question then becomes, well, why are they hoarding it, right? Are they hoarding it because they don't like, because it's almost like a pawn shop. So if I'm a bank and I need money, I go and I put up an asset, they lend me money, and then next day I go in, pay back the loan, get back my asset, right? That's how it works. So one of the things that could be going on is that the big three banks that hold all this cash don't like the assets of the other banks that need the money. That could be. We don't know for sure, right? But that could be. So, and then you start to ask, well, what would be in there that they wouldn't like? Well, we have, you know, I think 70% of condo markets purchased that closed in 2023 have a mortgage on there. They're investors and have a mortgage. Okay. 80% of those that have mortgages, those investor ones that have mortgages, they're all underwater, right? So they're all like negative cash flow. 30% of those are negative cash flow by $1,000 a month. Okay. So now you've got these banks who've got these investors who bought these homes. Some of the investors were planning on flipping and then couldn't flip because the prices dropped.
Yeah.
So they converted it to a rental, right? They closed and then rented it. So now
rentals dropped.
But the rent, well, now rents are coming down too. But the mortgage payments were so high, they don't cover the rent. Even at high rent levels, they just don't cover. So now you got these investors who are thinking, you know what? I'm just going to walk away from this thing. I'm going to put it up for sale, right? Or maybe the banks are concerned that they're just going to be a lot of power of sales coming in that market. So now, if that's your collateral, is you've got all these outstanding assets out there, but the assets aren't anywhere near what they were valued at close, well, the other banks could be saying, we don't like those assets. Could be. We don't know for sure, but it could be, right? So those types of things are happening. Those things are real. So what if when these guys came out and said, yeah, you know, rates are going to drop 1.75% this year and then another 0.75% next year, I'm beginning to think there's at least a slight possibility that maybe they knew things that we had no idea knowing, and maybe the banking sector is really sensitive right now, and it is. And maybe the federal bank is going to have to, the federal government and the Bank of Canada are going to have to step in, and we think they already have, we can get into it later, but we think they already have, step in a big way to support these banks. Because you can't have a bank, it's like Monopoly, the bank never goes bankrupt, at least in Canada.
Well, see, that's what they did in the U.S., right? See? And yep. You can't, like, you support them to save them, but then you don't support all the little people.
Now, little people never get supported. Never. It's always the big people. And it's always because of bad decisions by the top guys.
Of course.
Right?
So how do you keep on? You can't. At some point, it collapses. Mm-hmm. It has to. It
has to collapse.
So it's, I know that a lot of those investors, I know a few people, they all went in thinking pre-con, I'll buy this condo, I've got X amount of years, I know my payments that I have to draw every so often. But the problem is, as it got closer to actually closing and taking possession of it, all this thing, it just changed.
Yeah,
then they started crunching their numbers and they're like, I can't rent it out. I can't carry the cost because I'm already carrying my own mortgage. This was supposed to be a secondary. Now you introduce the whole capital gains now. I mean, I want to ask you, I know that there, you know, government has been talking about primary residence tax. Like, is that going to happen before they leave their fiasco?
I think it'll happen before you and I are no longer here. It's definitely going to happen.
I think it will happen.
Yeah.
Because right now you get a lot of agents and people talking about borrowing money. They're like the transfer of wealth. You've got the baby boomers that are at a certain point where maybe they're passing on, or they have enough that they can survive their final years and they're handing it off to their offspring so then they can buy something and then they can qualify to buy something.
Yeah.
But the problem is now if you introduce this primary tax, primary residence tax, that's just one more. We're already being taxed so much that it's just insane. So it's like one more thing that you can't even transfer this wealth now without getting taxed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the average Canadian pays 43% in tax total, right? Which is just nuts. So that means if you're a 9-to-5er, you're working for the government until 12:45.
Almost half of your yearly income is going towards the government.
Yeah. And we have very little say in it. But I think they will go after the principal residents. There's and I'm going to forget the name of it now, but the government, there's this lobby group that the government has been meeting with. And obviously they meet with a bunch of lobby groups, right? But this one group, their thing is to tax wealth, tax principal residents. And they go through and they explain how to do it and whatnot. And that's going to happen. And one of the things is they're saying, oh, but we can defer the tax. So you'll still incur the tax the year that every year. But if you're a senior, we'll defer it until you die or until the house gets sold. It doesn't eliminate the tax. Right? It's just, you're not seeing it. It's like, it's all smoke and mirrors, right?
Yeah, so all of a sudden you have a transfer of wealth, doesn't matter if it's through the will or whatever, you're going to get this huge amount of taken off right off the top.
Right away, because you got these back taxes, right? Back taxes on the capital gains of the home.
Well, it's terrible that one person and their government in the span of 8-9 years, whatever, going into 10 years now, has doubled the debt in this country. Of all the other previous prime ministers, right? And how, like, I'm sorry, I can't support Ukraine. I can't support any of that crap because not at the expense of Canadians. Mm-hmm. I can't, right? So I never will. And I'm like, we shouldn't have been printing money. We should have been focusing in our own backyard and fixing our own problems first before we started inviting our problems elsewhere, you know? And it's unfortunate they continue to do that. I just don't understand how they're not accountable. Like, you can't continue doing this. You're just going to see more and more defaults. And you might actually in history now see Canada's banking system collapse for the first time in our country's history.
Maybe not collapse, but it'll definitely need something's going to happen. It's not just in Canada, but worldwide. The financial systems are
everybody's being hit with this.
Right now, it's just a mess, right? And we don't know. Us little guy, we don't know, right? There's so many types of transactions that exist that we have no idea. There's this whole underlying, you should research the euro dollar, right? So it's this whole system, which is important. It keeps stuff moving, but it's not even real. But it's like using U.S. dollars, but they don't actually have any dollars, right? It's research it. It's kind of a
really,
but it exists. And this is how countries are able to borrow money really quickly, is through a system called a euro dollar. Now, it's not as used as much. I mean, I remember taking this back in, when was I in economics? 91, 92. And remember discussing it back then, this euro dollar thing. I don't think it's used as much, but it's still used, right? And I completely forgot about it. Everybody I talked to, no one knows about it. So there's so many things in the background that we have absolutely zero idea of what's going on, that those things are the real things that impact what's happening. We like to think in Canada that we're autonomous, right? We make our own decisions. Mm-hmm. We don't,
no.
Right? I mean, Tiff Macklem, with all due respect to Tiff Macklem from the Bank of Canada, he has to follow whatever the U.S. does. He can go a little bit off, like he's done now. He's dropped two times, right? And the Americans haven't yet, right? So he can do a little bit, but he's really constrained in how much he can do, because we have the Americans, and they're like King Kong, right? They control everything. So we don't really have a say. Whatever they do, we do. And if you look at the U.S. Government 10-year bond yield.
Okay.
And then you look at the Canada government 5-year bond yield. They're identical.
Really?
Yeah. One goes up, the other one goes like the
no,
US
no. We've
goes
always been completely. As far as I can remember, we've always been that way,
yeah.
Which blows my mind, because Canada, we should be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
We have so much land here. Everybody's focused in Toronto, and that's why you're getting such a shit show going on in that core. You know, it's poorly managed by the premier. It's poorly managed by anybody that's associated with that. Chow is a puppet. I don't care what anybody says. It's just, there's a fiasco going on. When I say there's such an opportunity here in Canada that we shouldn't be in this pickle, but yeah. We are in this pickle. So now we have to try to figure out how to. And I guess the problem is that all I get now is I get conversations with tradespeople. I'm leaving. I think every single week somebody new I speak to has decided we're picking up the family, we're selling the house, we're taking the loss, and we're moving.
Leaving Canada.
They're leaving Canada.
Yeah.
Majority of them are going either Florida or Texas. And we know why. We totally know why those two states, Texas. Right? That's exactly it. There's the only sanity is going on in those two states, right? Which makes a lot of sense. Chevron recently just announced leaving California, going to Texas. Chevron, a massive company that's been in California forever, is going to Texas now. Yeah. So, but the other thing is they're also going to Europe. They're going to smaller countries and they're going to smaller towns. And they're doing what I just joked, I think it was on a show or maybe talking to people, where I was like, let me pitch an idea to Mattamy Homes. I want to pitch an idea to them, a big builder, saying, listen, I want you to build a community. And in that community, at the center of it, there is so-called a farm or a farmer's market where that community contributes to having produce grown, having eggs, and even getting into butchery and all this other stuff. And we pay into that. So that's part of the purchase price of that house. And now that's your community farm. And so you get, you know, that'll never happen. Mm-hmm. The government will never allow that to happen. But that's what old school European, that's what we used to do when you're walking around in small little towns. Everybody shared what they had.
That's right.
You knew who had the eggs. You knew who had the beef. Like, you knew all the produce. You knew all that stuff. And you knew that you were getting good quality food. Canada, first of all, in my opinion, should never be GMO. Like, it should be fighting that whole battle. But we know why we're going down this road. Deals are being made that shouldn't be this way. Mm-hmm. It goes the same with oil. You can't have a PM that has vested interest in Saudi oil when you have more oil in out west that we can be having, you know, really insanely low prices for fuel. But insanely low prices doesn't benefit other people. That's right. The problem, right?
Yeah.
I guess my question to you, Paul, is like, when we were younger, in our 20s, even in our 30s, it was totally reasonable to think I can buy a vehicle brand new, spanking car, smell new, for like $25,000 and pay it off in X amount of time. It wasn't a lease. It was a paid off in 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Done. I owned that vehicle and maintained it, took care of it. And it wasn't unreasonable to think, hang on, I can afford a $250,000, $300,000 home. Not necessarily in the downtown Toronto core, but in the growing suburbs at the time. Right. And so it's not possible today. You can't take a 25-year-old. I love speaking to young people and they're looking at it like you can't even afford cars. Cars now are tickling $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority of the car market is a lease market. Everybody's just choosing it for lease for the business purposes. And then they're trying to you know,
which financially makes no sense for the average person.
It doesn't at all.
Business people, maybe, because you can write it off. But the average person, no. But why are they doing it? Because that's the only way they can afford it, right? It's the payment.
Attention, homeowners and businesses. Are you looking for top-notch electrical contracting services you can trust? Consider the expert tradesperson behind Effect Electric LTD. They take pride in delivering quality, service, and professional installation on time and on budget. From Kohler generators to main service upgrades or network data installation, they do it all. With years of experience and a commitment to excellence, Carlo and his team at Effect Electric LTD are your go-to professionals for all your electrical and generator needs. Effect Electric LTD is an authorized Kohler home energy generator dealer. Kohler has air-cooled 26 RCA units, the quietest, the most powerful, and exceptionally durable generator with 109 amps max power on liquid propane. Custom color options, camouflage options, and every generator Kohler makes is built to last and is equipped with a commercial-grade engine. Call Effect Electric LTD today at 416-508-7725 or visit them at effectelectricltd.kohlergeneratordealer.com. Let's build something great together. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. So how do they get into the housing market? So you start talking, you go back to the pre-cons, you go into condo development, you go into, but I mean, now you're getting into the same thing that you talked about earlier, where they would be stuck, majorly stuck, because if they're going in as that's their primary residence, and then now they're underwater $1,000 a month, they're just trying to survive on their income.
Yeah. Listen, there's when I bought my first house, I was, it was before I got married, so I must have been 28. So I must have bought it. It was new construction. So I must have bought it when I was 27, somewhere around there, right? I was working as a teller at Canada Trust. Okay. My fiance at the time was doing nails. That's what she did, right?
Yeah.
And she was really good at it, made a lot of money cash, but also worked, you know, minimum wage at somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So between a minimum wage job with her, right? Because that's all we could prove. We couldn't prove any of the cash.
Yeah, you
right?
can't touch any of it.
Yeah. And then my income as a teller, I think at the time I was already a senior teller, but I was still a teller at the bank. We qualified for a home, a semi. We qualified for a semi, right? And it was, we were comfortable, right? We had nice furniture. We all did it ourselves. We saved up for the down payment within the year and a half it took to close or whatever it was. You can't do that today. And even worse, I was having this conversation with my mom. We immigrated to Canada in 72.
Okay.
And in 72, I mean, I think my parents bought their first house in 78, right? So 6 years after being here and then paid it off in 6 years.
Right? 6 years.
I think they paid 40, was it 40? 70,000?
Where did they buy?
In Brampton.
Okay.
It was either 40 or 70. I can't remember now. They paid it off in 6 years. You know, they had tenants, right? Yep. Paid it off in 6 years. We then moved, and they bought another house for $160,000. So they sold theirs for $100,000 and whatever, bought one for $160,000. That's where my mom still is today.
Okay.
So that house today, I mean, at one point it was worth over a million change. Yep. It's semi, right?
Which
today
is the norm, yeah. Yeah.
Today it's probably $850,000, something like that. But they did this on, you know, immigrant salaries, right? And I started talking her through today. If her and my dad came to Canada today, they wouldn't be able to afford a house. They just wouldn't, right?
So what are we doing with all the immigrants that are coming in having that dream? Because that dream is being sold where they're coming from.
Yeah, that dream, that's right. That dream is gone, really. It's gone. I mean, you know, the average couple in Ontario makes $115,000 a year. This was,
This is two person.
Like a household. Yeah, a couple. Yeah. Yeah. $115,000. That probably, I think it was the last census. So what was that? 2020, whatever it was. 2021, whatever it was. Somewhere around there. So you're looking at around 115. Let's call it 125. Okay. To qualify for a mortgage today, you're looking at roughly around four and a quarter times your gross income. So if you're at 125, okay, you're looking at qualifying for a mortgage of $500,000. Okay, let's push it to 550. Okay.
You tell me, where are the homes that are $500,000?
Maybe a 500 square foot condo, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Right. But what can you buy? Right. And that's the average income.
So right? What are they expecting people to do? Are you supposed to have a second, third job? Are you supposed to try to become some social media expert and become an influencer and have all this extra money? Like, I don't understand where they think this income is supposed to come.
I don't know, man. See, you're right when you're talking about our politicians. I think our democracy is broken. It's actually funny. I got kicked out of one of the Reddit channels just for asking if our democracy is broken. Right? That's all I asked.
Of course it is.
Is it broken, right? Because, like, you know, right? If you're a politician, your first goal is to get elected.
Yeah.
Once you're elected, your next goal is to get reelected.
Is to stay in office. That's the objective.
That's right. Not period. Betterment of Canada, nope. Not betterment of Canadians.
Nope.
None of that, right? And I don't care if you're liberal, NDP, conservative.
It's the same thing on both sides.
Right?
Yeah.
So they don't care. As long as they have a job and they have a pension, right? And they're all getting super wealthy from being in power. So is there an incentive to help out Canadians? No,
of course not. And this is a problem that I have is that you'll get people that will complain to a point where they either leave or they become one of them.
Yeah.
And they'll look for an opportunity there. And our current government has increased, I don't know what the employee force is. It's staggering the amount of extra people that have gone into government. And now they're going to be eventually collecting their pensions and they've been making a lot of money and they don't care. And what I don't like is the spending where, you know, like you clearly see wrongdoing, illegal actions, but yet there's nothing happening as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And then Canadians are left with this tax. So now we're being told that we have to pay for it, but we didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's almost like I never broke into your house. Why do I have to pay the crime? I don't understand that. Yeah. It makes no sense. But it's not going to get better anytime soon. So that's why when I see anybody on that side of the fence talk about it's going to get better, I'm like, you're marketing this, man. This is just a marketing ploy for you to try to instill some confidence to get people that were on the fence to possibly get over the fence to your side, which is not going to happen to the smart individuals. They're going to really I'm just saying, do your homework.
And that's
simple
it.
As that.
Research.
Just do as much research. And I know that we know history. Governments are really famous for, well, we can't tell you the whole truth. If we told you the whole truth, you'd have no confidence in us. Well, we're already there.
You're right.
We have no confidence in you.
Yeah.
So you know what? Tell me the bad news, man. Simple as that. Tell me exactly what's going on so then I can make an informed decision. You know what I mean? Like we have a lot of people moving around, leaving Ontario, going out west, trying. I guess Alberta is like it's probably the one province that works for some people, but it's not. You're still going to have the same problems. You're still going to have capital gain problems. You're going to have this principal residence coming in. You're going to have all carbon tax crap. You're going to have all this crap still going on. So it's like, at what point do you start realizing I work 7 months of the year and then the other months go to the government?
Yeah.
Like, that's not fair.
It's not fair. But you know, people will, economics is complicated, right? And you really have to sit down and think about it. And the average person probably can't even comprehend some of this stuff, right? So when politicians come out and they come out with these feel-good strategies, right, and people don't really fully understand or think through them, right, they fall into them. I'll give you an example. When, you know, in the 80s when we brought in rent control, yeah. Right? I mean, if you're someone who's renting, that's going to sound like great news, right? The problem is when you get to a point where there's no incentive for the landlord to rent and they're going to pull those units off the market, I'm one of them right now. I've got a unit that's been sitting empty for 2 years.
You just can't rent it?
No, I can rent it. It just, who do I put in there?
Yeah.
How can I, if they're a bad tenant, because I live upstairs.
Yeah.
Right? So if they're bad, if they're loud, if they're ignorant, if they're late on payments, if they're, you know, 1,001 things, I can't get rid of them quickly enough. It'll take me a year.
So well, do I'm I here wanna, in 19 months.
What's that? We're 19 months, right? So do I want to go through that stress?
No.
Is it worth that $2,000, $2,500? I mean, it's a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
So I'm giving up a lot of money because I don't want to deal with that stress. But that's one unit off the market. Well, how many other calls are there?
There's hundreds, right? If not thousands of that.
Right. And so this is what people don't understand. If you start bringing in rent controls and you start making life really difficult for landlords, rents actually go up. They don't stay where they are.
Yeah.
And so what was happening in the 80s is you would have people doing like side negotiations. Yeah, I know you can't, this is, you know, this unit's rent controlled, so you can only charge me you can only charge me $1,000, but I'll give you an extra $300 a month cash.
Yeah.
So did it really help tenants? No.
No.
right? It didn't, but it sounded good. It was a feel good thing. It sounded good. So they did it. Much like what's happening right now, Chrystia Freeland announced, I think in April or May, she announced that we'd be doing 30-year amortizations on... Okay. So she comes out and says, and again, I'm not anti-liberal. I'm not pro anything. They would all do the same thing.
Yes. Right?
But she comes out and says, or the government comes out and says, let's take it away from her, that it's they're doing this. So let's backtrack. So what she said was that they would allow first-time homebuyers, when purchasing new builds, to use a 30-year amortization.
Instead of the current 25,
okay? Now, if you're putting more than 20% down, you can already go 30. So this is really just for CMHC-insured deals, so yes, less than 20%, because right now it's capped at 25. So you would think they come out and say it's to help affordability, okay? So then my first question right away was, okay, if it's for affordability, why are you just doing it for first-time homebuyers, right? And why for new builds?
Yeah.
You know the reason? Figured it out. When we were talking about the banks being in trouble, the builders being in trouble.
It benefits them.
It's going to take, because you've got a lot of these investors who purchased, closed last year, closing this year. The values have dropped. Who's holding those mortgages? The banks. Who's holding all the risk? The banks. Those are all uninsured. Most of them are uninsured, right? So they're holding this risk. So now if you can convince a first-time home buyer, right, to pay, they now can increase essentially 8% more, right? They can qualify for 8% more of a mortgage. So now if you can do that, okay, that can maybe stabilize the condo prices, right? Because it's mainly condos that we're talking about, even though it applies to new build homes too. But we're talking mainly condos.
Just because here, the amount of the property, that's why.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of cushion the price drop on the condos, right? Okay, so now you're protecting the builder by doing that. But then what you're also doing is these mortgages are all insured. So a current investor will sell their property, uninsured mortgage, sell it. These guys come in, buy it, and now it becomes insured. The risk now leaves the bank and goes to CMHC, which is a government-controlled entity. So who are they protecting? It has nothing to do with affordability. No. It's about protecting the builder.
But that's how it was sold.
And protecting the bank.
When I looked into it and I saw that, I was like, once you started crunching the numbers, you're going, okay, fine. So you're increasing the amount of time to pay off this mortgage by 8%, right? Yeah. Doesn't seem like a big number, right? 5 years, what's the big deal, right? But in the end, you're going to be paying 17% more interest.
In interest, yeah.
So how is that benefiting the homeowner?
Yeah.
It's not.
It's not, right? But they don't share it.
That's not. I put the blame on her because she's the representative of the government. So she's a representative of what they're doing. If you're going to sell that snake oil, you should be letting everybody know this will increase it by 8, but you'll pay 17% That's more. Right. Now us as Canadians can make a conscious decision and go, well, I don't want a 30 year. I'd rather do a 25 and leave it at that.
And leave it.
But they can't sell those box of cookies. That's the problem, right? And I'm getting tired of, I go back to, there's no accountability, so we don't trust you. It doesn't matter what you guys say. We don't believe you. I mean, I strongly believe that the reason that we're getting taxed to death and all this carbon tax, and I will argue all kinds of tree huggers, climate, carbon tax, and all that crap has nothing to do. You have a country that has the most amount of fucking trees out there that are taking care of the carbon already. So it's got nothing to do with climate and saving the planet and all this other crap, right? You get rid of humans, this planet will still be around for billions more years, right? We are the problem. So it's like, you're taxing this so then he can balance his budget, so to speak, for election time. Mm-hmm. All he wants is a talking point.
That's it.
That's all they want. When they get closer to that election, they want some sort of an ounce of argument that we've balanced the budget here. We've actually got the numbers into a relatively sane amount. So we prove that we can actually run this country properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But good luck with that, because I think any educated Canadian is going to go, no, you've been lying to us for a decade and you've been hammering us at all the costs on everything that we do. And we don't trust you anymore. And I'm not saying that the alternative is going to be much better, but they're going to at least give us a little bit of relief. But they're going to, like you said, they're going to continue down the same train. You can't have politicians. They should be reflective of the public.
That's right.
Their income should be reflective of the public. Their pensions should be reflective of the public. None of it is reflective of it. That's the problem. They're all living in these certain homes. Like, they're all living way above the public, the general, like the mass amount of, you know, listen, I have a lot of respect for veterans, you know, and the cost was too high. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden you calculated and $12.6 billion was given to Ukraine in the amount of time that he's been in power. Then, but the cost that the veterans were asking for, just for like basic, you had veterans sleeping in cars that are actually working for the Canadian forces.
Shouldn't they have a house paid for? Don't we all?
I think every veteran should have a house paid for from the money that they're wasting.
I agree.
I think that it should come out of the PM salary.
Why would you want to be a veteran?
You have no reason to defend this country because what benefits are you getting? You're not getting anything. No. At some point, Canadian armed forces were respected. Attention aspiring tradespeople and entrepreneurs. Looking to break into the skilled trades or start your own home service business? Meet TradeLinks Consulting, your go-to partner for success. At TradeLinks Consulting, they're passionate about helping you find the right trade, build your business, and mentor the next generation. Whether you're exploring your options or ready to take the plunge, they offer tailored career consulting and startup guidance to get you on the right track. Visit them at www.tradelinkconsulting.ca today and book your personalized strategy session. Your future in the skilled trade starts here. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. You know, around the world, they totally were, but they're not. Nobody wants to listen to, and going back to your point how this is all global and we're seeing this all around, but you're seeing it with countries that are all hanging out with each other when you have G7 kind of collaborative efforts coming along. All they're doing is rubbing elbows going, listen, you guys, it's the telecommunications industry in Canada. Bell talks to Rogers, Rogers talks to TELUS, and they all talk to each other, and they go, listen, this month you're going to discount 5%. Next month you're going to discount 5%. It's the construction industry. You get three people tendering a job. One goes in low, one goes in high, one goes in medium. Who gets the job? Then they switch that shell game to the next job, and everyone's getting cake at that point.
Yeah.
And Canadians should be fed up. They should be doing their research and should be fed up with all of this crap, and we should be more self-sufficient, man, and start questioning all this stuff. But I mean, I've had people on the show talk about how we can't even formally complain about people that are changing policy. There's no room for a submission to complain to get any kind of traction on that complaint.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hold anybody that's pulling our strings accountable
at all.
Zero. So how can you not argue the fact that democracy is dead in Canada?
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, we have elections, but
with Chinese manufactured machines on the last election, which it's clearly been obvious, it's been proven that there was interference.
Yeah.
But we can't reveal the interference.
Of course not.
You can't continue holding us at bay, not telling us the truth. Canadians are smart individuals. We just want to be told what's going on, then we can make an informed decision. Simple as that.
Easy, right?
Right. But I'm sure every nation wants that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not letting that happen.
No, it's not in their benefit to. Right. You look at, it just gets crazy, right? You look at our current immigration status, right?
It's insane.
Crazy. And so you're letting in 1.2, 1.3 million people in a year. Okay. If you took some time, and again, province has a responsibility here. The federal government has responsibility here. Everybody has responsibility. No one's doing what needs to be done. But if you really wanted to increase the population, and we need to, right, Manny?
Yes.
I mean, we have a negative birth rate here. Well, it's positive, but I mean, our
population is negative. We did a show. Like, every couple is like, I see more couples with dogs than I do with kids.
Right? So that's a thing. So we need to bring immigrants in.
Yeah,
right? And we want immigrants, right? But why don't we do it properly? Why don't we say, hey, let's bring in the tradespeople first. Let's build the infrastructure, right? Let's build the roads, build the hospitals, 100%. Build the doctor's offices, build schools, build all this stuff first.
And they will all come and use it.
Right. Then you bring in the social services people, the cops, the doctors, the nurses, right? You bring those in. Then you open it up because now you've got the infrastructure. We don't have infrastructure right now. We don't even have infrastructure for what the population we have for 35 million people. And now we're up to 41 almost, right? It's nuts. And I mean, you would think that a politician whose benefit is the betterment of Canadians would think about these things, right?
Or at least present solutions. I'm not saying come up with all the best ideas, but at least have conversations about what options are on the table here.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're presenting is not working. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to figure out what's Canada going to look like 10 years from now. Let economy wise, immigration wise, housing wise, like we've only been seeing it I mean, what is it, 20 years now, Vancouver was at the top of the list now. It just kept on going insanely high cost of living or cost of the properties there. And then that just, you know, springboard right to Toronto and Ontario area. I mean, what are we going to look like in 10 years? If we have, I looked at the numbers and right now our immigration, our population is just over 39 million, right? I don't know where this 41 number is coming from, but when I went online recently, which was this week, it was 39 million. That's where the number is, 39,700,000 or something like that. So I don't know if that number is lowering because people are leaving, but I don't know if it's that many people leaving, which is another tax that they're proposing.
Yeah.
The exit, right? Yeah. So in 10 years, I think they're predicting, what is it? Something like 50 million is going to be in Canada. We're going to increase 10 million people in a decade time, right? What's the cost of an average house going to be? And what's the cost of your income going to be?
Yeah. Have you heard of the Century Club? Or Century, is it the Century Club? The Century, it may be the Century Club. Again, it's another organization that's trying to convince the government, okay, to get to 100 million population.
By when?
2100. So they want to get to 100 million population by 2100. So why? Got 70-something years.
Why?
Well, see, why? Because someone's going to benefit. It's not going to be the little guy. Someone's going to benefit, right? So you look it up, research it. And the government actually sits down with these guys, right? And these guys are actually, they're the ones that are, it seems to me that these lobbyists, they're the ones really coming up with the policy for government. It's not government. It's these lobbyists who come in and say, hey, listen, this is what you need to do. This is why you need to do it. And then if you listen to what the government says and then go read what these guys are recommending, it's verbatim what they're saying. So it's not any policy that the government's creating. It's these organizations or these lobbyists around that are really, you know, forcing through policy, right? And it's a mess. It becomes a complete mess.
What do you think is the primary reason why the younger generation is not having the babies? Is it cost of living?
Primarily.
Like they can't afford a house, so you can't afford to feed. Like back in my day when I was in my high school years, I think we're like post or whatever, we were having lots of conversations. And I think the number of $150,000 came up at the time to raise a child to the point of post. So you have a child, it's going to cost you over that period of time of 18 years. It will cost you as a family, $150K to provide for that child.
Right.
Right. Whatever their school trips and their vacations and all their accessories and all kinds of Wonder Bread sandwiches, shit like that, right? I can only imagine that number is dramatically much higher now.
It'd be stupid.
It's got to be $500,000 to take a child from nothing to 18 years old and provide for that child. So I think that the primary reason that they're not having children, so if I was the government, I'd be encouraging having more kids. We would want to see more kids being born in Canada, not immigrated to Canada. But you're not allowing it happening because of all the costs that are associated with everything.
Yeah, and I mean I can only speak to the young people that in my bubble, right? So my daughter who's 22, my stepdaughter who's 24, stepson who's I think 30, 31, and the number one thing is income, right? It's how can we support? But the number two thing is they don't like where society is today, right?
They don't want their child raised in that society.
In a society where everything's so divisive and you can't, you know, you got to be careful what you say because you're going to get deemed to be this, deemed to be that. And so it bothers them, right? And so those are the two main reasons that I see young people saying, no, we don't want to have kids. Now, they probably will, right? But they may not have them until they're maybe in their late 30s or 40s. That's the other thing, too. It's... When I first started doing mortgages in 1990, I think I could be wrong on this, but I think the average age for first-time homebuyers was in the 20s. I think it was 27. I believe that. Yeah. Right?
This would have been 1990s, early 90s?
Early 90s.
I believe that. Right? What is it now?
32, I think, 33. And it's going. And that was like a couple years ago. So if you look at now, it's probably going to be closer to the 40. Right? Kids are living at home until they're almost 40 right now.
They're being forced to because they can't come up with the payment, like the down payment. We've heard, you know, the other side of the fence of the politicians talking about how they need 25 years to come up with the down payment.
Yeah. If they're smart. If they were like me at 25.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Then I smartened up when I bought the house. See, buying the house actually settled us down, right?
Yes.
These kids don't have that anymore. So that may backfire.
They've given up. They just said, we'll never be able to afford it. You have a generation of kids that don't have driver's license, don't have vehicles. They're Ubering everything, either food or travel. And so they're like, no. But the thing is, I can sit on a curb and just watch, and I'll see a wide range of cars from as inexpensive to really luxury cars walking into your local Starbucks buying a $7 coffee. Where's the sensibility? When we were younger, we weren't even considering that. Like we would save for Jordans if we really wanted to spend the money on Jordans. You know what I mean? Like we were talking about $130 pair of shoes back in my day in the late 80s, early 90s,
which
right?
Which is huge today.
Which was massive, right? So it's like, you're like going, you plan that to get that. Nowadays, it's like, okay, go spend $7 on a coffee.
Yeah.
But do you do that every day? 5 days a week? I don't understand that. So are you? I'm assuming that you're seeing a lot of people that are not realistic regarding where their expenses are going. Like they're not being taught, I guess, whether it's from the school system, which is not, right? Financial.
I have a big problem with that because I think that's one thing you should be teaching at school, right? Definitely, you have, like, financial literacy is huge and kids need to know, right? But they don't. They don't know what an interest rate, they don't know what interest rate really is. So when they get a credit card, 18, 29, it's all the same thing to them, right? They don't know, they don't know anything really, right? It's the individual, you know where they learn? They learn on Reddit, right? And they learn on X, and they learn on Snapchat and on TikTok. That's where they learn, right? Which I'm not discounting that. There are some benefits to social media in terms of learning. But that's not where you should be getting your base, right? Your base should be taught at school. So instead of focusing on other things, focus on that, right? Make sure that before they leave, that they have a good understanding of finance, a working understanding.
I agree, 100%. I mean, right? Paul, if you were to talk to a 19-year-old today, they got a good paying job. Let's say that they're making, maybe they're really, and they're hustling. They're making 100 grand, one individual. Right. And then they've got their expenses. Right. How would you educate them moving forward? Realistically telling them, listen, you're 19. You're making this much money. This is your occupation. Where are your expenses? You know, what are you paying for? What are you covering? Your car payment, insurance, all this other stuff. Right. At what age should they start planning? I'm going to buy my first house. Is it 10 years from there when they're in their late 20s? Is it in their early 30s when they're getting ready?
Whenever they can afford it, really, right? That's the way I look at it, right? So if you're 19 or 20 or 21 and you're starting out right now, you need to do a couple things. Number one is you need to make sure that you have a safety net set up. So an account where you put $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, and that's just for emergencies.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not your expenses. That's just, hey, something happened. I wasn't expecting it. I can dip into this without doing anything. You do that. And then the next thing you do is you make sure you have no credit cards because this is where they get you, right? And I'm, here I am, I'm teaching my daughter and I understand this whole debt cycle, but yet I'm also a mortgage broker and I know in order for you to get a mortgage, guess what you need? You need credit cards and you need loans,
yeah,
right? And so I remember having a hard time where, you know, Europeans coming over and back in the early, in the 80s and 90s, they didn't want credit. Everything was cash, right? Yeah. Well, and then they were like put on the bottom of the totem pole. No, you can't get a mortgage. What do you mean you want to buy a house and you need a mortgage? You don't have credit. Well, isn't that a good thing? Right? No. Well, we're teaching them that no, you need credit, right? They don't care. You just need credit. But then you you have to qualify. You need the good credit. But they teach you right at a young age. And this was me teaching my daughter. Go out as soon as you're 18, get a credit card. Right? Because you need to start establishing your credit.
Don't spend it.
Don't spend
it. Just have it. Right. Use it occasionally.
That's right.
But don't rack it.
Don't rack it up. Right? And then I said, if you ever want to buy a house, you need two credit cards. So when, a year later, go out and get a second. But the problem is they entice these people. And we're being sold to all the time. Right? We're driving in the car. It's a sales. We're watching or on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. It's a sales pitch. Everywhere we're being sold to all the time, like almost 24/7. As long as we're awake, we're being sold to. And so these kids fall into it, right? So I would say set up that emergency fund, $2,000 to $5,000. That's the first thing you want to do, right? Number two then is you want to then set up 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. So whatever your expenses are today, per month, multiply that by 3 or 6. put that away again. And that's the money you dip into for regular things. If you lose your job or you're off sick or, you know, something like that.
You want to make a career change. You want to take a little bit of a gamble. You can survive that.
You can survive 6 months, right? That's what you do. And then on top of that is then you put 20% of your net, not your gross, but your net. 20% of whatever your net income, you put that away into savings. And if you want to buy a house, you know, there are some really smart people, way smarter than me, who will argue that buying a house is actually not a good financial decision, right?
I've heard it, a lot of people.
It depends, right? So,
hey, homeowners and businesses, are you looking for top-notch tile and stone services you can trust and count on? Consider the expert tradesperson behind the Tile Guy GTA, Omid himself. He takes pride in delivering quality service and professional installation on time and on budget. From mosaics to large slabs to custom niches and miters, the Tile Guy GTA has you covered. With years of experience and a commitment to excellence, Omid and the team at the Tile Guy GTA are your go-to professionals for all your tile and stone needs. From full waterproofing solutions of every possible product to the finish, grouting details, even a hint of design recommendations when the client needs to hear the truth. Call the Tile Guy GTA today, 647-716-5062, or email them at thetileguy.gta@gmail.com. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
If you're really good with your money and you can take that 20% and then invest it in something safe, can't be risky, right? It's an argument. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's an argument to be had. But if you do those three things, set up the emergency fund, set up the 3 months to 6 months thing, and then 20%. And the younger you start, the easier it is, right?
Compound.
Compound interest. They don't teach that, right? And that's what they need to teach. You want to hear a crazy example of compound? And it's going to blow your mind because even today, and I've got an educational background in economics and I've been doing this since 1990. So I know this stuff, right? But it still blows my mind. The average return on a real estate in the GTA over the last 50, 60 years is around 6% a year. Forget the last 5, 6 years, which were just stupid, right?
Yeah.
So 6% a year. You ever heard of the rule of 72?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so you take 72, divided by your interest rate, and it'll tell you how many years to double.
Yeah.
Okay. Go back in real estate. Pick out an average house in 1974, okay? And then it would have doubled, right? So if you take 72 divided by 6, so it doubles every 12 years.
Yes.
Right? 72 divided by 6% annual growth in, over the last 6 years in the GTA for real estate. So every 12 years, a house is doubling in price. So whatever purchase price it was in 1974, right? By 1986, it would have doubled. Mm-hmm. Okay. By 1998, it would have doubled again, right? And it goes on and on. And it works. I've done it with my parents' house. I've done it with, I've done it with clients, their history on their houses. And it's true because that's where we get the 6% from, right? It averages out and it's compounded.
Yeah.
And it's all compounding. So figure this out, Manny. The average house in Toronto today.
1.3, 1.2?
Let's call it 1.2. Let's call it a million.
Yeah, million make it easier, yeah.
In 12 years.
2 million?
2 million. 24 years, Manny? 4 million.
Yeah, I believe it.
Our income's going to go up that much? No.
No.
But is it going to happen? It will happen because somebody's going to make that money. It ain't going to be the little guy. Someone's going to make that money, right? Now, is it going to take, we're in a really tough situation right now in the real estate market. So I'm not suggesting that people get in today. That's not what I'm suggesting. But I'm saying that's compound. That's how it works, right? And is today the right time to get in? I probably, if I was looking, I probably wouldn't be getting in today. But that's
I would spend my time right now research.
Yeah, just do it.
This year, next year, just do homework.
Yeah.
Right? But I know about that whole compounding and that climbing. My question to you is, I don't know this for a fact. What happened during the Depression?
Good question. I don't know. So
the price of houses before it happened and then during it, because there had to have been a correction, right?
There would have been. But there's this thing called the unlucky investor, okay? And I think someone's done it for house prices as well, right?
Okay.
And essentially, it was referred to stocks. So it basically said this unlucky investor gets in and buys stocks at the worst possible time. You bought it during the depression, lost a bunch of money just before the crash.
Yeah.
He still came out ahead, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's where the average comes in, right? Yeah. So in order for the average to be six, that means some years had to be well below six and some years had to be well above six.
You have to look at the grander picture.
That's right. So as long as, I mean, if you're looking for an investment, this is really scary right now. But if you're looking for a place to buy, do your research. Take your time. There's no rush, right? I mean, we don't know everybody's situation, but take your time, right? Are things going to get better overnight? No. The Bank of Canada rate dropped 50 basis points so far. Is that going to have any effect? Zero. Because
it's not enough.
No. It has to come down to 3% before it actually starts affecting affordability, right? Because if you really want to buy a house today, you don't go variable. You're going to go 5 year or 3 year because you can qualify. Those are much lower rates, right? You're talking rates in the low to mid fours for insured deal, right? Yeah. Versus, 5.7 on a variable. So if you really wanted to buy a house, you would just take a variable out of the equation and go with the fixed and you could buy it. So because of that in order for the variable to start making any kind of difference, it has to be at the same level as fixed or below.
Yeah.
Right? So it's got to come down a lot. It's got to come down another easily 1.5, potentially more. Is it going to happen quickly? We'll see. We'll start to see very quickly over the next few months on what happens in the States and how bad the numbers really are. Because some people are suggesting it's worse than anybody's thought. Other people are saying, no, it's not. So we'll
see. Here in Canada or in the U.S.? Both right? Because we're reflective. It's a convenience store mirror. Yeah. That's how I look at it.
It really is. It's all it is, right? Now, our government likes to come out and saying, hey, we've come out. We're the top country in the G7 for GDP growth.
No, we're not.
Well, we are. But that's Let's only
break down the numbers again, right?
Well, no, it's because you brought in 1.2 million people.
I know.
But if you look at the GDP per capita, which is how much each person is actually producing, we're actually worse. We're 33 out of 35. That's the number you look at, not the GDP. The GDP
can be. They're not selling that.
They're not selling it. They're coming out and saying, hey, we've got the best GDP out of the G7. Yeah, but you got the 33rd worst, right? out of 35 countries.
So, I mean, I guess, Paul, in the last couple of years, and I guess in the next year or two, it's going to be interesting conversations for you and your clients trying to figure out when to finally get in. Because I agree with you. Now is definitely not the time to get in. Now's the time to do your homework. But then when things start to shift a tiny bit, which I think is going to be after the US and the Canadian election, that's when you're going to start to see things change, hopefully for the better. And you'll have to get in before it starts to go back to skyrocketing levels again.
Yeah, because, eventually, I'm really hoping that once things start going up, it'll go up in a more controlled manner.
Yeah.
But I fear that we're going to get right back into, if rates come back down to in the twos, if you're getting variable rates in the twos or even in the threes, let's say, right? I think people are just going, you know what it is too? Back in the day, houses were priced based on what you could afford on your income.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not, I don't think, what's happening today. And I talk to agents about this and they all disagree with me. So maybe I'm just out to lunch. But the way I see it is, the last few years, the way houses were being priced was based on how much rent can I get from that house. So it was like a commercial property, right?
Really?
They were being priced on cap. So they were working backwards, right? They were saying, okay, I've got I'll use my house as an example. So I have a three-bedroom bungalow with a finished basement with three bedrooms, right? So we got two units of three, right? And so you could easily, right, rent out each room, right, upstairs probably for like $1,200, $1,500 each, right?
Easily.
Yeah. Downstairs probably a little bit less, but you're still looking at 12. So then they work backwards. They say, okay, I can get, let's say, $6,000 rent. Okay, so now what's my property tax on that? What's my maintenance on there, right? So now that I've subtracted this from it. So now I got 6,000 minus my property tax, minus a little bit of maintenance. This is the amount of mortgage I can qualify for. This is the amount of mortgage I can sustain.
Yeah.
So now let me work backwards and say, how much of a mortgage is that? And then they work back. Okay, well, that's the amount of the mortgage. Well, that's the price I'm going to give you. I've got, 20% down. So my mortgage plus the 20% is what I'm willing to pay for that house. the houses were never priced like that before. They were always priced on my income, not the house's
income. Well, the income rising was the same line that the value of the house was rising.
Always. It's always been like that.
There's such a major split between those two lines.
And I think it's I think a lot of it, and it's not just investors, but that's how people think. Well, I can just rent it out, right?
The majority of people are just going to be living in a rented world. We're seeing a lot of countries doing that now.
I think you're going to see that. I think that Canadian dream that we had, I think it's done, right? And I know that sounds pessimistic, and I'm not saying that people won't qualify. People will qualify still. That whole wealth transfer will help. But what you're having right now, do you know a third of grandparents are supporting both their children and their grandchildren?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right?
With whatever income that they have.
For expenses, yeah.
Well, that income is for their retirement years.
Yeah. And they're dipping into their savings.
Which puts them in a very
precarious situation.
Yeah.
Right? And that's 30%. That's a huge number. Right?
See, and this is where the argument where I go into, and I can't stand this, that fine, we're bringing in a lot of immigrants, but you're getting a household with like three or four families in there, and you're getting these massive driveways being expanded, and you're getting all kinds of cars now. So I can only assume that's how they're qualifying because they have adults, probably six of them. So it's no longer a two-person income situation. It's six people providing income, and then they're getting approved, right? So you can put how many people on a title? What's the max?
I don't think there's a max technically for a bank. I mean, the more you start adding, the more the banks start looking at it kind of funky, right? But in today's day, it's becoming more and more common.
It's money.
Yeah.
It's secure money at that point.
For them, hey, now we, instead of going after two people, we can go after six, right?
And their assets and whatever, if they ever do decide to default, which they won't, but then now you're going to get them buying these houses that for the majority, most two-person can't.
That's right. Right. And so, I mean, that's always been the case to some extent. It's just a lot more now, right? I mean, Portuguese did it when we first moved in. The Italians did it. The Greek did it.
Yeah, but we did it as a stepping stone to get to our own place eventually.
Right, eventually. Right.
But economy-wise, they can't afford it any other way. I don't know how as an immigrant, even though you're getting all this money that you're being given, that's far more than Canadians that have been here providing to be a Canadian, you still can't sustain that. You still have to get, you know, four or five other people to contribute to cover those costs, right?
Yeah. So it's tough. And that you're starting to see a lot of weird kind of, you're starting to see unrelated people coming together to buy properties. And so they'll share the kitchen and the living room.
Really?
Yeah, you're starting to see things like that happen. I don't know how, I mean, that's like a recipe for disaster, right? But you're starting to see that.
Because that can become legal.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I've seen it. I know you're talking about. There's lots of people that are like, they're bringing in, I guess, boarders, right? So you're getting people that are just like, they have a bedroom and they share the common areas.
Well, that, but no, people buying the house together.
Together.
Like they're getting on title together, and they're unrelated and they just met and whatever, but they each have a good down payment and they're putting together.
That's just going to be wrong.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, just briefly going back to the renters and I know that the PM, was it earlier this year or late last year that he made a modification on the renter's agreement where it says that you can look at the history now and then you can actually challenge whatever rental prices that they're offering and saying based on your rental a year ago, this is what you're offering. We want this instead. And you can challenge that. And all of a sudden it goes against a credit rating now. There was all these little things that he was doing, but he was doing nothing for the landlord. When I totally agree with a lot of people online talking about how if you do not pay rent, and you got to wait that 19-month process to go through a tribunal, it's criminal. Because you're talking about, let's just bare bones it, $1,500 rental times 19 months.
Yeah.
That starts to become criminal amounts of money that are basically being stolen from you.
Yeah.
And then even if you lose at the tribunal, like the tenant loses, they don't have to pay that amount.
That's right.
They just walk away from it. They eventually get kicked out now.
Formally. Well, you might get a judgment, but how are you ever going to collect
it? How are you going to collect it?
Right.
I think at that point, it should be just criminal, as simple as that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. If it's intentional, absolutely. If someone loses a job, you know, hey, it's not intentional, but at the same time, the landlord...
there's professional renters out there that they know their rules, right?
100%. 100%,
So it just, it makes it pretty scary. So you're 100% right where it's, and you're getting people going back to the couple situation. I have friends from high school that refused to get married in the fear of, you know, they worked really hard to pay off their house. They did it at a time before all this fiasco. And all of a sudden they've got a free and clear house. And if they want to get involved with somebody, there's a risk that they will lose that house.
Yeah.
To somebody who never contributed to that house.
That's right. Right. So it's one of those things. I mean, I've gone through it in my family, right? I've been divorced twice. So I've gone through it myself two times, right? And you know, you never, things are good until they're not good.
Of course.
Right. And when they're not good, they're really not good. So, you know, if you've put in all that money, you came in with the down payment, the other party's not going to care. They're going to say, no, I'm entitled to it. Oh, your parents gave us, you know, whatever it is, $100,000 down payment. It was for us. So I'm entitled to it, right? But and legally they are. So I mean, you have to be careful. Absolutely.
Being in the game so long, Paul. Like, I mean, are you still optimistic that there's still opportunities here for people? That it may not be in the Toronto core. It may not be in the immediate suburban area around the Toronto core. But you might want to consider a smaller place. Like, where are there certain cities right now that are looking pretty attractive economically speaking?
Really? I don't know. I mean, I'm a big real estate guy, so I think real estate for most people at least was, right? How you're going to actually get a good retirement, because most people are really bad at saving.
Yes.
But real estate and having a mortgage, it's like a forced savings.
Yes.
Right? So to answer that question, right now, I'm scared. I mean, I'm scared for young people. I really am. I come out and say this all the time. I don't know how they're going to do it.
How do they react?
They know. You don't need to tell me. We already know we're screwed.
Okay.
Right? Unless they get help from their parents or grandparents, they won't be able
but
to.
But it puts the grandparents and parents in a situation. Like, you can look at your family tree and you can gauge how much, you know, they're going to live for, how long. But what if they exceed that? And all of a sudden now they have no money now because they lent it for you to get started.
Yeah. So what do you do?
What do you do?
No, it's a tough. It's really tough, right? So I think you're going to start to see. I think the premier. I'm not sure. I haven't been able to research it myself. I haven't had time this week. But I think the prime minister, not the premier, the prime minister came out and said something to the effect that he wouldn't allow house prices to drop because that's people's retirements. I think that he may have said that recently.
Saying something like that, right? But in the same breath, he's talking about taxing that principal.
Right. Well, that's another reason why they don't want it to come down, because they get more tax revenue, right? But so I don't think prices are going to come down. I really don't. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of fluctuation, but I don't think it's like some people think where it's going to drop 30, 40%. I don't think it will. I think we're the levels we are at right now are going to be the levels plus or minus, you know, maybe 10%. If you got a $1.2 million home, yeah, maybe it'll go for $1.80 million, $1.50 million, maybe, right? But I think the government's going to do everything it can to keep that up.
Meet Jonathan Sinelli, the visionary behind People First Leadership. Jonathan is not your average leadership coach. His People First Leadership approach focuses on putting people at the core of your strategy, creating workplaces where teams thrive and achieve outstanding results. What sets him apart? Jonathan is a master at asking thought-provoking questions that spark genuine conversations and challenge conventional thinking. His deep empathy helps him understand unique challenges and guide people toward impactful solutions. As an accomplished author, media host of the People First podcast, and seasoned project management expert with a background as an electrician, Jonathan offers unparalleled experience and practical insights. Whether you're interested in a one-on-one coaching or breakout room sessions, Jonathan customizes his approach to your needs. He also travels the world, speaking at conferences and business events, inspiring leaders with his dynamic presentations. Discover how People First Leadership can transform your approach and ignite your team's potential with Jonathan Sinelli. Call Jonathan at 416-717-4139 or email him at jc@jonathansinelli.com or reach out to him on his website at jonathansinelli.com. This message is proudly supported by the Construction Life Podcast.
Right? And they have to, they're concerned too, because, you know, I think at the last time I checked, which was last year, real estate, the real estate component of GDP, including construction, right, was 11 or 13% of GDP. Hmm. So if you've got this entire market that sucks right now, and that's going to take a huge take on the GDP. Now you know why they're starting to bring people in, right? It's to keep that GDP up, because you know what GDP is used for? To calculate the interest on our debt, right? So right now we're rated AAA right now, but if that drops, then
how
the interest
can we be rated AAA?
Because you know the governments can always print as much money as they want, so they can always pay their debt.
How do you not factor in? Like, I mean, let's just talk about common sense here. You've got a government that's doubled the debt in 9 years, and if you're carrying a credit card and you've exceeded the limit and you keep using it because you're paying off the minimum, how are you still in a good credit rating score?
You're not.
You're not.
As soon as you get to that,
shouldn't be in a triple rate.
No, as soon as you get to that 70% mark on your credit card, your credit rating starts to get hit.
People not factoring in the fact that it's like we've gone from $600 billion to $1.2 trillion in Canada. Like, that's not a good plan. That doesn't make any sense, right?
I mean, eventually it'll catch up. But right now, no. They're still rated AAA. But in order to keep that AAA, right, they have to keep their GDP number, because it's all fake, right? They have to keep that GDP number at a certain level, because if it starts to drop, then that rating will start to drop, and it may go, you know, well, as soon as it starts to drop, then the interest we pay on our debt starts to increase. So what do? They increase population, because, you know, if you're an immigrant coming into a new country, you got to buy a bed, you got to buy clothes, you got to buy this, so that contributes to the GDP. Right. So that number, that's how they're able to keep that number fairly half decent. But then when you go to GDP per capita, which is the real number, it's OK, what's the GDP per person? Right. That's how you really
measure.
But
they never talk about that.
They never talk about it. And we suck at that. Right. We're, 33 out of 35 countries. Right. And that's the number. And so, yeah, will that eventually? I would suspect it will. But Canada for now still has, it's still regarded as one of the safer countries to go to. So I think we'll be able to maintain that, and they can get away with doing whatever it is that they do, because that's their philosophy, is you can borrow your way out of this because you can just print as much money as you want, right?
Scary, scary times, Paul. What else do you want to... I think we've covered quite a bit that I was actually... I know pre-con and rent, we talked a lot about this stuff,
yeah.
The elections. I'm assuming, because you guys handle power of sales as well too, right?
We save people from power sales. That's what I do.
Okay, right? All right. Yeah. In what way? Where, like, you help finance?
Try to get them financed temporarily so they can sell the house on their own, make a little bit more money than if the bank sells it.
Got it.
Right? You do things like that, yeah.
But the banks must be looking at this, and these numbers are going up, and they're like going, we're taking losses here, we're taking major losses.
Banks actually being pretty reasonable.
Really?
Yeah. We like to, and especially me, and I've worked for all of them, right? I mean, I've worked for Scotia, TD, RBC, CIBC 2 times. Did I miss one? I think and then Canada Trust before the whole Canada Trust TD merger.
TG merger, right?
Right, yeah. So, I like to hate on the banks, because I think they need to be hated on sometimes. I think they get away with things that they shouldn't. I think a lot of times people will, especially when we're talking about mortgage fraud, We'll blame the brokers, we'll blame the real estate agents, we'll blame the lawyers, but no one blames the banks. The banks gotta know. They have to know what's going on.
Of course they do.
But, it's into their benefit to, as long as the mortgage is being paid, maybe we don't care that much. I mean, do they care? They do. But you can't tell me that, for this whole time, you didn't know you had fraudulent mortgages on the book. You had to have known. And then I've been in situations where...
It was just a risk. It was a gamble. That's all it was for them.
Yeah. Like, I've been in situations where banks have fired entire mortgage broker teams, right? And then you sit back and you go, okay, so for 5 years, this was the number one team in Canada. And now you're firing them because someone complained, right? But you didn't tell me for 5 years you had any clue at all.
Yeah.
Right. And so they get away with stuff that I don't think they should get away with. Right. But having said that, today they've been pretty good, and they've been taking their time with the power of sales. They've been trying to help out people. They really have. Right. So, I mean, I'll give them credit, because it's in their best interest to help these people too. Right. But
I just look at it like, for the most part, all the banks are selling what's in their best interest.
Yeah.
They're not in the best interest of the individual.
True. It just aligns.
It's kind of like the government.
Yeah, pretty much. It just aligns right now, right? Does, that 100%. Their interest and the client's interest kind of align together. But you're right. I wouldn't argue with that.
Right? I think people should just learn to how to do more homework. You know, just be aware, ask as many questions as possible, speak to as many different people as possible, and just get the information. Doesn't matter if it scares the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Right. Like, it's better to be scared, but know than to be scared and have no idea what's behind door number three. Right.
100%.
Right? You know, you're absolutely. And you know what? What you're doing is awesome. Cause I watch your stuff. And when you're telling people, you know, kids to think about construction industry, right. And you're telling them that that should be part of the school. It should one of my biggest problems with schools, as soon as you start grade nine, you already got to tell them what you want to do when you get out of high school.
Yeah.
How do you know at grade nine what you want to do?
You don't.
You don't know, you right? Don't.
You're still discovering.
Yeah. And then they're not, the focus on trades, to me, if I couldn't do it, and I'm not saying this because of your show.
Yeah.
I legitimately tell this to my daughter. I legitimately tell this to everybody that I can. If I couldn't do what I'm doing right now, I couldn't make money in it, if I sucked at it, I would go into the trades, right? And so that kind of stuff, that's what we need. We need education for young people, right? And it's ugly out there. And we can't lie to them either, right? We can't lie and say it's going to be a bed of roses. It's not. It's ugly right now. But if you work hard, I still think if you work hard and you save, then you know, there's possibilities. I've changed my mind on college and university. I used to think that, you know,
it was a viable option.
Yeah. I don't think for the most part, you're taking arts. If you want to take arts because that's what you like, great. But if you're going to take arts for a career, I think you're just wasting time and money. Right.
Well, a lot of people like doing both.
True.
That's how I look at it. The only other problem that I have with the government, and I do respect a lot of young kids that are getting into trades. Like, we just had two kids in here, you know, 19 years old, and I know how much money they're making per hour, and they're doing a really good wage, solid wage. But the work that they're performing is extremely difficult and hard, taxing on your body. And I just kept on asking them, are you guys conscious of what you're doing? Because your body's perishable and you never know how long it's going to last. So as long as you're learning the business side, which they totally are, they're understanding the business side. Their employer is very open on that. My biggest problem now is that you got a lot of government funding, more of that expenditure that they're printing money, trying to get a whole generation of kids into construction. And with the way economy is now, how you said earlier, how if you were to build all this infrastructure, we would need the workforce. Right now, you're sending all these kids out to this workforce that doesn't exist.
Right now,
we're not building. You have half the workforce right now that is at home. They're not working. I'm not going to take this new kid on. So now their kids are being deterred. They've spent time and money to get into the construction industry, to learn the basics, the entry level stuff. They're not told the full truth about the industry. Then they arrive and they can't find a placement. So what are they going to do?
Yeah.
They're going to go elsewhere. They're going to get either a warehouse job, a barista job. They're going to do. Now we've lost that individual from getting into the trades, which is the worst thing that you can do. You need to start approving projects. When we've got a country that has a 280-day waiting period for a permit.
A year. It's essentially a year.
If everything lines up properly, right. It's a joke. And then when you got a government that decided to give all the municipalities big chunks of money to streamline that process, but then the municipalities took that money and offset their debt, and then they increased the fees on building.
That's the biggest scam. It's a Ponzi scam.
Like, that makes no sense. Yeah. So now you basically have made the problem worse.
Yeah. Yeah,
we needed to move this along. We needed to get more approvals. And I'm not talking illegal Greenbelt approvals. I'm not talking about Science Center approvals. I'm talking about legitimate approvals, right?
You know, there's out of all the pre-sale condos, so pre-built, they're just selling right now,
yeah.
Right? They're only 30, all the units available right now in the GTA, only 30% are sold. So the developers need to get to 70 before the banks kick in with their financing. So all those projects.
And they're not getting.
They're stopped.
They're going to stop. I know that. Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're talking about developer fees. From 2000, I think it's 2009 to now, they went up 1,600%.
I have a major problem with that. But again, I go back to our current government trying to balance the books for the next election.
That's all it is.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
So you got these development fees that are 1/3 the cost of the structure that you're purchasing. Yeah. That's unheard of and it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair. You need to get rid of those fees. But we can't get rid of those fees because those fees are contributing to their bottom line.
Yeah. Did you hear about that new, a bunch of the builders are getting together and they're lobbying now the government to help out. They call it CANT.
Well, that's really interesting because I'm sure those same builders have had huge envelopes of money.
True. True. Yeah. But what they're asking for is they're asking for the government to, so it's called CANT. It's the Coalition Against, what is it? CANT. Coalition Against New Home Tax. Okay. So that's what they're called. And I think they're right now, there's three or four developers in
that
there
are attached to it.
There are that are linked to this thing right now. And they're trying to get more. But the idea is they want the federal government to get rid of HST on all new builds. Condo and homes.
I agree with it.
They want the municipalities and province, well, Toronto and the province, to get rid of land transfer tax on new builds.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. And what's never happened. You're right. And what was the third? There was something else on there. So it was HST. It was the land transfer tax. There was something else on there. But anyway, they're promising that they will pass on the savings dollar for dollar to the end user. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But you know what that does tell me? That shows you how bad the industry is. If builders are getting together.
Big developers are willing to do that. But the problem is that, what do we know about history and government? The moment you introduce a tax, tell me about a tax that's been removed.
Never.
So I was stunned when Toronto introduced a land transfer. I was bullshit, right? And then Chow has recently passed the rain tax, right? Hard surfaces. Like, you just keep on, you're beating everybody down.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just, and nobody speaks up or against it. And now good luck on trying to get rid of it. And I know that the other side of the political fence there, they're talking about they're going to get rid of the carbon. They're going to get rid of the capital gains tax. They're going to get rid of all that. That's all you're going to do. And you're going to get fought on it all the time.
Yeah.
But if you don't speak up now before it gets in, good luck on trying to get it out.
I mean, that rain tax, you take a commercial unit like Yorkdale. Right, it's going to get taxed. I mean, it's going to be brutal for them, right? Something like Yorkdale. So, what do you think is going to happen to the rents at Yorkdale? They're going to go up.
It's going
to
go through.
So, what's going to happen? So, that's going to come down. Who's going to pay for that eventually? It's us.
I've been saying that in 20, 30 years, there will not be any malls.
There won't be. So, what happens to all those people that are working there?
They have to find other jobs.
Doing what?
Construction's really good if you start streamlining the process and get rid of all the development fees.
Yeah, true.
I know what you're saying, right? But that's all prime land there that we don't need when everybody lives on an Amazon world, right?
Yeah.
You can order anything you want.
True. That's true, too.
Like, retail's going to be gone. Malls are going to be gone.
I agree.
Phone booths are already
change.
Gone.
It may change. I can see where malls become more experiential. Like the 100%. Canada Goose thing, you walk into a freezer, 100%. This is how it feels like.
Yeah.
Right? Something like that. Maybe you have a car dealership, a Mercedes.
Well, look at Tesla. Yeah. They're in malls and it's not a dealership. It's just the car's there and you walk in, it's an experience,
it's
right?
It's an experience, yeah.
But that's what it's going to be. But you're right. Like, the rental rates are going to go through the roof. Yeah. So, and that land is going to be far more valuable putting 100 units on it.
Of course.
Times 20 towers going on right now around Yorkdale.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that they're building the 20 some odd towers around Yorkdale. And I'm like, you're selling all those towers on the fact that Yorkdale's there, where you can go to the theater, you can dine, you can experience and have a social life and all this other stuff. But what's going to happen when that mall disappears?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting times. I got to do 12 questions with you, Paul.
Yep.
www.pauljrocha.com, www.mortgagebriefs.com. His email is paul@pauljrocha.com. And also under the Mortgage Scout name as well. You can find him on LinkedIn. And his phone number is 432-7662.
416.
416. I know. We're old enough to keep the 416. I will always keep my 416. I don't want a 289 or 647. What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
345.
Triangle.
I love the 345.
I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Pythagorean theorem, right?
Basic.
Yeah. Love it.
That's a good one. What's your least favorite tool?
My least favorite tool is probably the sander.
The noise or the dust or both?
Both. I don't get any gratification from sanding at all.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Buddy, when things were simpler and, you know, just things were what they were, and there's at least we thought things were what they were. I miss that.
I'd love to see hockey nets on streets again.
Right?
I'd love to see bicycles on streets again that are not in bike lanes, that are just BMX just riding around with a bunch of friends. Yeah. We don't see any of that stuff,
None.
Right?
Nothing.
They passed a law where you can't have the hockey nets. Like, nope. I'm not even a hockey guy. And I thought that was stupid.
It's dumb. It's dumb. I tell this all the time. I'll walk out my front, because I work from home. So I walk out and I'll have a coffee and I like being outside. And, you know, it's summer, right?
No kids out.
There's no kids.
No kids out.
Zero.
And if you do see a kid,
heads down.
Yeah.
Just. Yeah. Many times I go for a walk and I see someone walk by me and their head's just buried in
yeah.
their phone.
Yeah. We used to be out until the lights turned off, right? It was good old times back in the 70s and 80s.
What construction sound do you love?
The my miter saw and the pneumatic nailer.
What kind of miter saw do you have? What brand?
DeWalt. No, yeah. It's not. It's a Bosch. I had a DeWalt sold, and then I ended up buying it stolen. Then I bought the Bosch. And I love that thing. But, you know, the sound from the pneumatic nailer on, you know, the roofer guys, yeah, love that. Yeah, love that.
I love that in the summertime. What's your favorite beverage?
Just one?
No, you can have several if you want.
No. So I think I'm going to go with an old fashioned. Yeah.
Smoked, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You got it, buddy. A little bit of that smoked bourbon.
It's always a nice little drink. The yeah. problem is that at some point, well, actually, after the first one, it's like water.
It really is. It's just got enough sweetness because I don't like fruity drinks, but that just has just enough sweetness, right?
It's a nice drink. Yeah. I haven't had one in a while, but it's a nice drink. What turns you on and off in construction?
Traffic, right? Traffic and dust. I mean, that turns me off. What turns me on? I just love where you see it, like a small little patch and you wonder, there's no way they can build anything here.
Yeah, I know. And then they build.
And then they build. You go, how? Right? Question. Can I ask you a question? Sure. Can I ask you a question?
Sure, you can. Yeah.
Because I don't think I'm dumb. I think I'm fairly smart, but I can't figure out how the cranes increase in height. How do they increase themselves in height?
It gets jacked, right? So if you ever see it, so when they're originally starting, they'll shut down the street. And so the main components, the fulcrum and everything, they're there. But typically the crane is the elevator shaft, right? So then it's sections of the cube. And then they park it on the base. And then as soon as they're ready for the next floor, they just jack it up, put the next one in, jack it up, put the next one in. And they keep on building each floor as they're going up with it.
So it always jacked from the bottom?
It's always jacking on each.
On each level?
Yeah. So they jack it up, insert the next one. Jack it up, insert the next one. Keep on going.
That's so weird to me.
Yeah. It just happens. It's just like I've seen it a few times where they set it up, which is totally amazing to watch.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, it's scary as hell because I just saw one again today. Was it in Toronto or was it in New York? Could have been New York collapsing.
No, really? Yeah.
The New York had a rash probably about a decade ago. There was almost a collapse every single week.
Shoot.
So, yeah, no, they just jack them up.
That's so weird.
That's all it is. And then they remove it all, bring it back down again, and they just remove it all, and that becomes the elevator shaft or whatever they want to use it for.
Very cool.
Becomes challenging when it's a different kind of build. You know, I can only imagine what's going on in Dubai with the line and stuff like that and what they're building there. Like, those are crazy things. Yeah. I'm sure there was different techniques for the Burj Khalifa. All this, but a typical structure, and I've seen that. I've gone down in Toronto and I'll see a small little lot, and all of a sudden, like a big poster, you know, 18 story hotel or whatever, boutique. Wow. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be quite the fiasco with all the trucks in this one street, Richmond, Adelaide, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then you blink an eye and it's just there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Favorite curse word?
Oh, fuck.
Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
1967 Jaguar E-Type. British racing green, tan interior.
That's got to be like what the value of an original one is. It's got to be millions.
I don't know if it's but it's got to be up there.
Yeah.
It's got to be maybe, what, 700,000?
Yeah, I'm thinking like an original if it's got the original numbers and everything like that. It's always that beautiful shape.
Yeah. Isn't it nice?
They don't. Back in the day when they drew cars like that, they clayed it and they don't do that shit anymore.
No.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
I think I said it already. Electrician. I think I'd be an electrician.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
You tinker your own stuff?
Not an electrician. I'm scared. It bothers because I don't know what I'm doing.
Can't see the pain.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. Right. So it scares me. But I think I would do it. I'd like the science behind it. I'm a big science guy, so I like the science behind electricity.
There's a lot of calculations and figuring out stuff.
Yeah.
What profession would you not like to do?
Good question. I think at one point I thought maybe I'd want to be a teacher. I like teaching. I just see where society is and how kids are something. And I don't know that I'd put myself in that situation.
I've never seen so many, and I never thought in my lifetime, so many contractors that are putting their kids in private school.
Yeah.
for the reasons that we talk about all the time. They don't like where the public system has gone.
And it's on both sides of the aisle, right?
Yeah, I know.
It's on both sides. And so that tells you something about, you know, parents are...
Start speaking up, man. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm not a parent, so I don't know, right? But last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Haha, you made it. Let's sit down and have a scotch.
Paul, thanks so much, man. Thanks, love to Maddie. Have you back whenever you got some time.
Absolutely.
And we continue the conversation. There's always stuff to talk about.
Oh, lots.
Be interesting to see what's going to happen coming up soon real quick, November 5th.
Yeah.
What's going to happen for next year.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens. But I'd say again, over and over, just do your homework, man. If you're in the market, do your homework.
Great advice. You never go wrong. As long as your decision is informed, you can never go wrong.
That's it. That's it. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, buddy.
Right here.